Bozeman, Montana, at 307 North 22nd Avenue. And this is November 16th, 2005. Art is a World War II veteran, and we'll follow along. Art, you can just kind of take off and kind of tell us a little bit about you before the war and afterwards and however you want.
Thank you, Charlie. I was born on my father's homestead at Scobey, Montana, and went to school there and then went on to college. I have one brother and one sister. Both have passed away. I'm married with two sons and a daughter, and our political leading has been pretty much Republican all the time. My dad was. I went off to college and graduated in 1942, May of 1942. December 7th happened in 1941. I was in the dorm that day, and boy, there was a lot of anger around, and the college had quite a time convincing these guys not to sign up right now. So that's what happened at Pearl Harbor, and many of my classmates never came back from World War II. The family response was, my father, although not a veteran, he was given a number of examinations in World War I, but they thought he was advanced in farming and better range food. After graduation from college, I went and I took a physical exam for the Marine Corps, and of course I had a murmur in my heart, so I thought that I might be 4F. And that happened. I came back home, and they wanted me to teach at a little town called Blacksville, Montana. And I left there because I got called for the draft and was found 4F. So I went out and worked in the shipyards in SeaTac in Tacoma, as I had a brother there. And and then I came home and helped my dad plant the crop. And in 1944 or 43, I taught school for another year, and I said, "This enough of this."
Flaxville, was that a country school or?
No, it's a high school.
It was a high school. You had high school in Flaxville.
And so I tried once more. I've tried a number of times. My hometown of Scobey, you get on, in those days, you got on the train. You went to Williston, North Dakota, then to Havre, Helena, Butte. And that's a 2-day trip.
Yeah, I could say that's a long train ride.
And I did that, I think, 7 times.
7 times, oh my gosh.
And anyway, the last time I got accepted by the Navy. How that come about, I don't know. But we went to Farragut, trained at Farragut. Came home for a few days and went back and was sent to San Diego to radar school. Radar school then was so secretive, you had to memorize everything. You couldn't take anything home for study or anything. 3 weeks after a waiting period, and sent to a ship.
We'll stop a minute. Let me. Okay, take off again.
The ship was what was called was a LSM, a landing ship medium. It was an amphibious ship with a flat bottom, with a well deck running down. It was 208 feet long and 36 feet wide, with a crew of 65 and 5 officers. We took off from San Diego and went to Pearl Harbor. Pearl Harbor, we went to Eniwetok and then over to the Philippines. The Philippine war was still going on up there. Lingayen Gulf had just happened a short time before. So there was a battle line, but we got liberty in Manila. And of course, a lot of the Manila was destroyed. And we came back. We had a, from Leyte, we had a milk run, we call it. We advanced more freight and stuff up to Manila. Manila Bay was such an excitement to me. Because I had to memorize pretty much all the harbors that we went to.
Oh, as the radar person, yeah, you would have to memorize that ahead of time, sure.
And then we were sent. There was no operations that going on at that time. Okinawa had been invaded. Iwo Jima was finished. We missed those two. We were on alert for Okinawa, but it didn't happen. We were sent to Guadalcanal, and at Guadalcanal, there's an island there, the Russell Islands, where we picked up about 350 ton of rifle grenades.
Ooh, that was a dangerous cargo.
And we started back for Saipan. Well, we went pretty close to Truk. That was the headquarters for the Imperial Navy in Japan. And I was on watch one night, and I called them to battle stations, I think five times in 4 hours.
Is that right? Gee.
Anyway, we got to Saipan, and we sat there for a long time. Nothing going on, no invasions or anything. Then we went down to Guam, and we were stationed at Guam for some time. Come about the 10th of August, 11th, 12th, something like
that. Yeah.
We got, the atomic bomb was dropped, and we waited a few days, and the war was then over. Japan had accepted that. The second bomb was dropped, too. And we were loading immediately the 136 CBs to take to Japan. So the next day we were on the way to Japan.
That fast?
That fast. We were seaworthy. We'd been out of dry dock, and we had trained some Marines similar about landing in Japan, but they were pretty ugly. Anyway, we got to Japan. I might comment here somewhere about the dropping of the atomic bomb. We were scheduled for the invasion of Japan in the first week in November of 45. And we were scheduled, I saw the battle plans afterwards, we were scheduled for the third wave. And the ships had not gathered yet, but they were in the process of gathering. Let me say a few words about LSM. Those ships, there was 500 of them built for one purpose, the invasion of Japan.
That's what that size landing craft. The others were all smaller, weren't they, that they used for the islands, weren't they?
Yes, there was other smaller ones, but the LSTs were the big ones.
Big ones.
The LSM never saw action really until Leyte and Iwo Jima and then Okinawa. There was nothing in the invasion in Europe. I don't think they were built yet. But they were built in various places throughout the United States. The crew was assembled at Camp Little Creek, Virginia. And at Camp Little Creek, Virginia, they went through training on this ship, and then they graduated from that, and they went to wherever the ship was being built in Tom Cruise. They had a big training period for knowing the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I come aboard, I never went through any of that training. And I was a radarman. I wasn't supposed to know anything else.
Oh, that's it. You didn't go through any of the training the crew did. Nothing. Well, be darned.
So it was a real, the first...
And radar was really quite new. Yet.
Well, it was so secretive that I couldn't even... if you told the captain, he says, how far is it to that island out there? So I'd reel it out and tell him yards or miles or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, my seaman's eyes better than that. They didn't believe radar.
Oh,
absolutely not.
Okay.
They didn't think that it was worth a darn.
Darn, yeah. Uh-huh.
But it was, they sure relied on it. They, mm-hmm. As we went along, they relied on it.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, we got to Japan, and we were at Iwo Jima for a few days, and we got a call from Bull Halsey to get up there, and so we went flank speed to get to Bull Halsey's fleet. And to me, the Bull Halsey's fleet of many countries, our line of sight to the end of the earth was 8 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And wherever you looked, you saw ships. It was
8 miles each way.
Yeah, it was a huge armada. Nobody really understood that. And then south of Tokyo Bay is another little Suwami Bay, and we anchored there. And the next two days on August 31st, we went into this Tokyo Bay and landed our CBs at Yokosuka Naval Base. Yokosuka Naval Base was not bombed. They didn't. Why bomb it? Because we're going to use it.
Yeah, you want to use it later. So.
We were the first to land there. We, after about 36 hours of bringing in troops and material, and we were ordered out of the Tokyo Bay to pick up American prisoners of war.
But when you first went in, was this kind of a tense period when you first
Very
went
tense.
In?
We didn't know what would happen.
Yes.
There was a couple, they told me, and I didn't see it, but they told me there's a couple Jap planes shot down that day.
Mm-hmm.
But this was a huge armada.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, who led it? The USS California.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, it was sunk in Pearl Harbor and was mm-hmm. raised and brought back to the East Coast. And they had to put a lot of blisters on the sides to give it equilibrium again.
Mm-hmm.
And couldn't get through the Panama Canal to get back because of the blisters.
Uh-huh.
So they had to go around the world to get to Tokyo.
Oh,
anyway, there's an old, one of the old battleships.
Mm-hmm.
We had other, like the South Dakota and the Missouri and
mm-hmm.
the New Jersey. Mm-hmm. We're all modern ships.
Sure.
We stayed at Japan for until about May of 46.
Mm.
We were in occupation. I even done SP duty in Ginza Street in Tokyo. That was but the worst duty you could draw would be in Yokohama at night.
Oh, is that right?
And they didn't give you a gun, they just give you a billy club.
Oh my gosh, go control the guys. Well, you went in and you unloaded the CBs, then you went back out and brought in supplies.
Right. We brought in the Marines.
Oh, you brought in the Marines. Oh, then you brought in the Marines.
I teased the Marines.
Yeah, you brought the Marines. That's transported them.
Anyway, They were great, all of them. I have a real admiration for Marines. They are the top fighting group. Then we, about in April or May, we finished our duty in Japan and wound up in Saipan.
Well, when you were in Japan, were you stationed aboard ship? You lived aboard ship?
We lived aboard ship. And once in a while, if there was liberty, then you'd draw that SP duty.
Yeah, you'd be the shore patrol.
The shore patrol. And
How did the Japanese receive you when you first went in there?
It's amazing. When we landed, we never saw a Jap. We didn't ever see a Jap until about 3 or 4 days later. We drew a Liberty in Yokohama, and about 12 men on the ship with an officer with one sidearm. And of course the Japs were waiting for us. They wanted to sell us everything, you know.
Yeah, sure. Sell you everything you got.
And
there, right?
It was amazing. He said, "Do you speak English?" Nayo. But they did. They understood everything we said. A lot of them did. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. English was really quite common over there. Mm-hmm. After we got through with the landing and that part, then we went up to a little town on the east coast called Shiokama. And we had a hospital ship with us and some destroyers and five or six LSMs. And we were the lead LSM with the ambulances aboard. Mm-hmm. And we went in over the, I don't know what. But anyway, the captain said we will maintain watertight integrity, that you lock everything down. Mm-hmm. And we went in thinking maybe we might hit a mine.
Oh, sure.
And we hit the beach there in Shiogama. And that afternoon, the captain said, well, half the crew can roll everything. And walking down that town was like a shootout at the old K Corral. Not a soul.
Nobody around.
The Dome News Agency had told the Japanese people that we would kill the children and rape the women. Mm-hmm. So the children were gone, and the women were gone, and the young people of age 30 and then all that was left was old people.
Sure.
Well, we walked down the street there for a while, and one of the boys said, oh, let's start up a ball game. So we went back, we had kitten ball at the softball. And pretty soon the kids were peeking around the corner and said, come on and play. So we had a big game.
Oh, great. So,
and then the people come out, and they were very nice. We took out about 3,000 or 4,000 American prisoners of war.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not sure how many.
Yeah.
But our first load, first trip, was 350 or 400 women and children. And they come aboard ship, and we were just amazed. Where did they come from? And the story was that they were at Singapore. They're mostly British subjects. They were in Singapore, and they got on their ship and tried to get out of there after the Japs, Pearl Harbor. And they were picked up by a German destroyer of some kind. They didn't know what to do, and so they took them to Japan. So they've been there about 4 years.
Oh my gosh, a long period of incarceration.
And they had a lot of stories. Some of them were very ill. And they all wanted to spot the tea. We didn't have
you. You didn't have any tea, huh? You never spot the tea.
Anyway,
have some coffee, but you didn't have any tea.
We made some cocoa for them. We were happy about that. that's about the story of it.
Well, the women and all these kids, then where did you take them?
Take them to the hospital ship.
You took them to the hospital ship.
And then from there, the hospital ship after, at night, would run down to Yokohama.
Oh, okay.
And take them there, and then they were sent to Guam, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then dispersed out back home.
Were they pretty emaciated, pretty thin, or had they been fed well?
There was not like the soldiers.
No, no. Okay.
Soldiers were thinner.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we would pull up along, and the soldiers had Japanese uniforms on. And the first thing that the nurse would tell them, undress.
Mm-hmm.
As they come, we had a gangway over to the hospital. And some of them wouldn't do that, but anyway, all those Japanese clothes were thrown in the water, and the Japs were out trying to get because they were short on food.
Yeah.
Now, the prison camps, I have a diary of one American in a prison camp.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long, long story. But the prison camps, we didn't think we could get them out before the winter.
No.
The upper echelons.
Mm-hmm.
So they tried to drop food into these things, and sometimes it didn't work. And the Japs got the food, I think one person was hurt from that operation, but the Navy tried to drop by parachute.
Sure, by parachute.
And on the beach there, they dropped overcoats to big army overcoats.
Mm-hmm, yeah, those big wool ones. Yeah.
Big wool ones, and there was a pile of that stuff there. As we took them out over to the hospital ship, and there was canned peaches.
Yeah,
so they had dropped
some food into a village.
Some food. Those stories of prisoners, they didn't talk very much.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't believe that this is happening.
Yeah, the effect of the shock.
Some of them were from Wake Island.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they're Marines from Wake Island, and they called us swab jockeys right away.
Sure.
Anyway, that's probably one of the most sights that I remember most was how we managed to do that. The captain, the kids, there was kids too.
Sure.
And they run all over the ship, and of course he was just tight as could be. But he afraid he might get into trouble.
Yeah, do something.
But he really complimented the crew. The crew took those people over and gave them cigarettes and got them food and anything you want.
And that, so the crew really...
really responded to this
human
thing.
Need there. Uh-huh.
And they were... when they left, many of them cried.
Oh.
They were so thankful.
Oh, I would think so.
I have never had any time that I would ever recall any of them. I don't recall many days.
I understand. I don't recall many when I was in Korea either. Some people were in different arrangements, they were closer to them and different over time periods, but and pretty well aboard ship then. Well, you had good eating and sleeping quarters aboard ship as a crew, didn't you?
We lived pretty good. Well, of course, out then you'd run out of milk, and so it was powdered milk.
Yeah.
And everything was powdered or powdered eggs.
Hydraulic potatoes.
Yeah, about two weeks out, maybe a week out, we would run out of fresh food.
Sure.
So we were on that course, we had to pull all the hats out of the flower.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, but it was, we lived pretty good. The Marines used to say, call us belly robbers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they said, now you can have your steaks after we leave.
Yeah.
There were no steaks.
Yeah, there were no steaks.
On our way to Guadalcanal, we had to cross the equator.
Mm-hmm.
So this is quite a ritual in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
You become a shellback.
Oh, okay.
And there's an initiation.
Well, you had a big initiation party.
The captain and two other men were the only ones that had ever been across the equator.
Mm-hmm.
All of none. So anyway, they were the court.
Oh.
And they filled the garbage into a large container, and we had to go through that.
Mm.
That was accumulated for about 2 weeks.
About 2 weeks. So you guys had really know what you had gone through. Well, you were in Japan then how many months? About 7-8 months?
August until May of the next year.
May of the next year, so about almost 8, 9, 10 months. Yeah. So you were right there when they were putting everything in place then for Japan.
Yeah. The Japanese people were quite hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And they would want our garbage.
They would want the garbage from
yeah.
the ship.
They had all kinds of money, big rolls of money, but nothing to spend it on,
uh-huh.
and it was worthless.
Well, yeah.
Well, anyway, that's all the troops could use.
Sure.
Until they got American invasion money.
Or yeah, military payments, or MPCs, or whatever.
MPCs,
yeah. Yeah, military payments.
But it was a while, so
mm-hmm.
we sold them a lot of cigarettes for their money, then we could spend that.
That money, and you could spend that around town, but...
They were hungry, and MacArthur ordered the Japanese to feed those people, So, with our help, not our help, but the government's help,
mm-hmm.
they brought in baking kitchens, and their diet was fish and rice,
mm-hmm.
and some vegetables. They had pretty good vegetables. But then on the day when we come in with the bread, they ate the bread and other things. But they have gained height.
Mm-hmm. As a result of all this.
As a result of their diet.
Yes. There's little short guys like you and I could walk down Tokyo over those days and kind of see other people's heads almost.
Yeah, that is right.
That's a new experience.
Anyway, 1995, my wife and I went back to Japan because we have three grandsons, step-grandsons. Two of them are in the Navy, and one was stationed at Yokosuka.
Mm-hmm.
And he married a Japanese girl. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And so we stayed with her parents in Yokohama. And we went back to Shiogama and looked that town over. And I wanted to go to Hiroshima.
Uh-huh.
And her father was so interested. Why do you want to go to Hiroshima? He thought I had something to do with it.
Oh, uh-huh.
I couldn't convince him I had seen it
mm-hmm.
from a distance. It was utter desolation.
Mm-hmm.
And we went back. They say it was built back up, but I wanted to see it.
Sure.
You wouldn't ever know anything happened.
Yeah, God, right.
It's the people are, I don't know how many, 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a museum, and then there's a place where they put the flowers mm-hmm. in memory of us.
Sure.
And they ring the bell for freedom.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So.
Mm-hmm.
How long did you spend in Japan when you were back
about
in 95?
About 10 days. About 2 weeks, I guess.
Real modern country now.
Very, very much so. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to drive there. You drive on the left side of the road.
You might commit suicide on the highway.
Oh, yeah. Although my grandson, he runs taxi service.
He worked for Billiard.
And it was in the Navy, too.
Well, when you finished up then in the next spring in the Navy in Japan, then you come straight back to the U.S. with your ship?
No, I came back to Saipan.
Came back to Saipan.
That's as far. I got off the ship
at Saipan.
And it was almost decimated for people who had their points and mm-hmm. ready to go home.
Sure.
I felt kind of bad. The captain was my officer, and then mm-hmm. he became captain.
Mm-hmm.
When you're right next to the helm,
mm-hmm.
the radar right mm-hmm. next to the helm.
Oh, sure,
so
yeah. So
nobody was
closer than
and nobody was really experienced on the helm, so I had that job too.
Oh, okay, I understand.
And we went out to Martha's Island. That's an island that's 10 feet high.
Mm.
And the authorities there told us we're the first ship that ever come in on the right direction. Everybody missed it.
Everybody else missed it, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then did you come back home on a troop ship to the U.S.
Yeah.
for discharge?
Yeah, it was a big Italian luxury liner.
Oh, gosh.
We got 3 meals a day.
You lived it up nice. Then.
Yeah. 6,000 troops.
Oh,
6,000 Navy.
That's a lot of...
A lot of men.
A lot of men aboard a ship.
Yeah. And we landed San Francisco Treasure Island.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we went then by train up to Washington, where we were discharged, and then you got on the train to come home.
it was
about 2 years, and I just couldn't see being a forever.
Yeah, you really worked hard at getting that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Well, then when you came back home, you went back to the farm then, or what?
Well, my dad says, maybe you should look around here and see if there's a teaching job.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have a car, so mm-hmm. I took my dad's car. Went over to Plentywood and nothing there, Antelope, nothing there, Medicine Lake, and I walked in. Roy Hommy. Roy was on the Golden Bobcats here.
Okay, yeah, all right. Yeah, I knew the name was familiar, but...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What in the world are you doing? I said, I'm looking for a job. You're hired. So, we stayed there in Medicine Lake 5 years.
Oh, you did? Mm-hmm. And then where'd you meet Cleo, or did you get married?
Well, I met her when I was home on leave.
Oh, okay. When you were home on leave, so.
And we corresponded for 2 years.
2 years while you were at a distance. Okay.
I had a brother that was over there, too.
Mm-hmm.
When I got ready to go back from boot camp back to regular duty.
Mm-hmm.
He was home for another couple more days,
mm-hmm.
and he was Navy too. He was an electrician.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Well, I said I'll tell you what, I'll meet you in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
That's a deal." He said,
sure.
"My dad."
It's a matter of you two youngsters.
Anyway, I got to Tokyo, so I wrote him a letter.
Mm-hmm.
Where in the world are you? He said, well, I'm in Taiwan. It was Taiwan in those
that time was Formosa. Then.
Formosa.
Formosa, yeah. Right.
He was there.
I'll be dead.
I never did meet him.
You guys didn't meet in Tokyo, but you got there, but he got close.
Yeah. We had a professor, another friend of mine, a professor on a Sunday afternoon. He came to us and said, I'd like to show you around. So we got on a train and went to Tokyo, took us through the Imperial Diet Building.
Oh, Oh, you did get through that.
Yeah. And he had a little 10-year-old daughter with him.
Mm-hmm.
She'd get lost every once in a while, so you can get looking at
around
something.
Them.
So I said, I grabbed her hand and she never let go the rest of the day.
Is that right? She stayed right with you guys, yeah. So she didn't get go on her own.
I tried to look him up and
you went back,
I had his address, but my Japanese friends there didn't know where he
was. Yeah, how you could find him. Well, the population density is so tough.
You see, there was 100 million people, or 100 million people, Japan and we were there. Mm-hmm. Now there's 120.
Yeah.
It's growing. And the island's the same size.
Yeah. Yeah, the island hasn't increased. There's no more land. But when they say no more land, but a place like that, it's what obvious that that's where it's at. So what are some of the key things that you carried on that impacted you out of the military that you carried forward into your other careers? You've had several other careers since then, farming.
We had
legislature.
We went to the school in Medicine Lake, and there was Carl Fiske. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know Carl.
Know the name.
And there was four of us, a low ag teacher, and those kids hadn't seen much discipline.
No,
Well, I got shook up a little bit.
In
those days, you could.
That's right, you
and
could.
And Roy, the superintendent, said, gosh, you guys are tough. Well, what am I going to tell the parents?
Uh-huh.
He said, send them to us.
Yeah, sent them to us. Yeah.
And it strained out, and they were the best bunch of kids I ever worked with.
Is that right?
They just were very polite.
Mm-hmm. They just needed something.
Yeah.
Yeah, ex-military guys aren't in very good frame of mind to be tolerant, usually.
we never hurt anybody.
No, but I mean, there were some expectations.
Yeah. And it was pretty tough discipline.
Yeah.
All eyes front.
Yep. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
So,
then when did you get elected to the legislature? Then you served in the legislature too in Montana for.
Well, I went out to the ranch. Mm-hmm. My dad had a heart attack, and he says you got to come home and take over the ranch. So we took that over, and. 1960, the school at Peerless lost their superintendent. So February 4th, I was in school at Peerless. Until the end of the year. Got them kind of going again.
Sure.
And I think 61, the superintendent at Scobie resigned. So they come out and get me and finish that.
Yeah, I'll be good.
And that was a different deal
from
they were handled a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they were good kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 65, I think I was called back to Peerless.
Mm-hmm.
The superintendent they had wound up in Warm Springs, the alcohol ward.
Mm-hmm.
So. He had spent quite a bit of money, so I said, well, you know, clerks in those days were elevator men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could write checks.
Sure,
and
that was it, yeah.
And I said, well, we better know where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
So I took the last checks that he wrote for the warrants and went into the county treasurer office. I come back to report to the board. I said, you have just enough money to pay the teachers to the end of the year, but you don't have any for me.
Mm-hmm.
Would you wait till next year? So in September next year, I come
you got paid for the previous year's work. Yeah, lots of ways to get things done when you're allowed to do it.
Well, I had a lot of leeway.
Sure.
And you had, and those kids at Peerless were the best. You would have to get after them, just kind of frown at them. And there were a lot of sharp kids, and a couple that probably weren't, but I graduated them anyway.
Sure, what the heck.
Those were great experiences. I've had a lot of experiences. We farmed for 30 years. Then after 1961, well, 63 is the first year in the legislature.
63 was your first year there.
And then I went through all that reapportionment.
And
I lost one term with Glasgow. Now I came back and I was there in nine terms.
Nine full terms, so I'm here a long period of time there. So.
I was a senior member in the House, right across from Francis Bardineau.
Right across from our good friend Francis.
He was a nice fellow.
He was a great person, he really was. You know, he really impacted the state in lots of different ways, and was very sincere about
everything he did. He was probably one of my good friends, but every morning we met at 7 o'clock. Says, you know, when you're thinking about this, what are the Republicans? I said, I don't have a clue.
Yeah.
And I said, I'll find out if you want me to. And I come back and I said, well, what? Okay. But he had a memory on it.
Oh. And everything he took on, you know, he did a lot of background work on it and that sort of thing. Well, when did you get with the Farmers Home Administration? You were into that in
81.
In 81, when you did it. So
I was getting tired of the same old stuff all the time. The same old griping and belly. After that, then that was an experience too. Federal bureaucracy.
Yeah, you learn that that's a whole different environment.
That's a whole different idea. We run out of time.
We're still got some there yet, but it's getting down, so.
Okay. But I enjoyed that too. I enjoyed it all. I enjoyed my life has been pretty good.
Yeah, it's treated you well then.
Yeah.
Okay, well, here, let me kind of wrap this up so when they know. All right. Thanks again, Arthur E. Lund, for giving us your impressions of it and your experiences in World War II. And fascinating. First time I've talked to anyone who was right in on the initial occupation of Japan. So thanks again, Art. And this is November 16th, 2005, signing it off. Okay, this is the end. Again, just a minute.